Resources is going to open as a subcommittee, and we're going to begin a public hearing on Senate Bill 281. And I'm going to ask Judith if she'll describe the bill and what we're looking at in Senate Bill 281.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 281 comes to us from the Oregon Veterinarian Medical Association. It would authorize both veterinarian interns and those holding a temporary permit to practice veterinary medicine in the state to administer certain health animal health products. Those are vaccines or other products that might become a hazard to livestock in the state if they're administered improperly or the vaccine was widely available. So there is a limit on who can administer those. This would expand the authority of those two groups to administer and use those drugs with animals. We have a no revenue impact statement received. This may have a fiscal impact, but we do not have a statement yet issued on the measure. At your seat at the dais is also a letter both from the Department of Agriculture on the bill, as well as a proposed amendment from the Veterinary Medical Examining Board. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Judith. Looks like we have three or four people to testify. Dr. Tom Keck and Marcia Keith have signed up first, so I'm going to ask them if they'll come up and tell us what's going on with this bill. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, subcommittee.
Subcommittee.
My name is Marcia Keith. I'm with Dave Barrows and Associates, and we represent the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association, and this bill was introduced at our request. Senate Bill 281 makes a single change to ORS 596065, and by allowing veterinary interns and holders of temporary licenses to administer rabies vaccines. Currently, it is only licensed veterinarians who have the statutory authority to administer a rabies vaccine. Oregon is one of the few states that requires a graduate from a veterinary medical college to serve a one-year internship under the supervision of a licensed veterinarian before being eligible for to become a fully licensed veterinarian. And the reason is that the Veterinary Medical Examining Board and practicing veterinarians don't believe that new graduates have had sufficient hands-on experience to practice completely on their own. So during this one-year supervision, with the consent of their supervising veterinarian, they can treat patients, they can perform surgery, they can even euthanize animals, they can really do anything that a fully licensed veterinarian can do except administer the rabies vaccine, and that's because of the statement in ORS 595065. At one time, as your committee administrator pointed out, rabies was a live vaccine and therefore needed to be handled with a great deal of care. It is no longer a live vaccine and it poses minimal danger. So that is the reason that the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association is asking that the law be expanded to include veterinary interns and holders of temporary licenses. Now, we understand that we have seen a suggested amendment to our bill, which would include not only veterinary interns, but licensed veterinary technicians in the list of people who could administer the rabies vaccine. And we have some concerns with that amendment, and I would like to have Dr. Keck speak to those concerns, unless you have any questions for me.
Well, I do have one question first. It says that Oregon is one of the few states that requires new graduates to serve a one-year internship. What do other states require?
Mr. Chair, many other states don't require an internship at all.
Do some require half a year? Do some... I'm just wondering.
Mr. Chair, I don't know the answer to that.
Are we absolutely alone requiring 1 year? How many states require a year?
Yeah,
Tom Nelson.
Okay. Senator Shields, my name is Tom Keck. I'm a former member of the examining board and presently vice president of the OVMA. As to your question about requirement of internship or new graduates to serve under a licensed veterinarian for a year, that is an Oregon requirement. It is a requirement that is unique to Oregon, that Oregon has had for years, that many other states have in over the last couple of decades tried to adopt and had resistance to. Actually, in our state, again, progressive, trying to protect the public, the veterinarians have liked it, and so have the new graduates. And all the years I served on the board, many people thought that it was one of the best things that we could do, and that the new graduates didn't just get thrown out there to make a lot of mistakes without somebody looking over their shoulder or helping them along. Other states don't have that per se, and their new graduates face a higher rate of complaints and disciplinary actions from examining boards. It's to protect the public and to protect the new grad. And it has worked out very, very well.
Okay. And would you like to continue
Yes.
with your testimony?
On behalf of the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association, thank you for having us here today. We are in support of SB 281 as proposed by the Veterinary Medical Association. We learned of the suggested amendments yesterday afternoon, rather late, and feel that it would be very inappropriate to rush any sort of decision concerning licensed veterinary technician and rabies vaccine at this time. We would highly encourage you to pass out the bill without the amendments as it is suggested. Our concerns are the fact that there is no consensus about veterinary technicians giving rabies vaccine. And in fact, there are big flaws with the testimony that will be presented to you that having veterinary technicians, and may I say licensed veterinary technicians, administer rabies vaccine will get more animals more animals vaccinated for rabies. This is not the case. In one of the statements will be made is that in rural areas, by having licensed technicians do it, you get more animals vaccinated. There are, in rural areas where there are few veterinarians, there are even fewer licensed technicians. And so you're not going to get more animals vaccinated. Plus, those technicians need to be under supervision of a veterinarian. So you're still going to have a veterinarian involved. In addition, at this time, there is no barrier to rabies vaccine administration. Animals that need vaccines for rabies are getting them. In rural areas, and I speak from that as a rural veterinarian, I'll vaccinate animals out there on the farm all the time on farm calls. And colleagues in Central Oregon, Southern Oregon, Southeastern Oregon commonly vaccinate the ranch dogs when they're out there for other work on the cattle. So there is no need at this time, as far as we are concerned, for veterinary technicians to administer rabies vaccine. And I'll just put it that brief that, you know, if the health division still has this concern, we should discuss that during the interim and then come back in the next session. Can I answer any questions?
Judith was raising a question here a second ago, and I'm not sure I understand it as well as she does.
Mm-hmm.
If it's okay, I'd just like to ask Judith to phrase this question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was curious, you are referring to the rabies vaccine, but in fact there's a list including other vaccines and other products. The Department of Agriculture has a list, so I just want to clarify to members that we're talking more than just the rabies vaccine. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Judith, no, we are actually just talking about the rabies vaccine. We're not interested in the other two that are on that list of hazardous drugs.
So you're saying this does not apply to... So in other words, you're not asking that interns and those holding a temporary license would be allowed to administer anything other than the rabies vaccine?
Exactly.
I think this bill does that.
Yeah, I don't think this bill does that.
Where's the bill?
We need some language there to clarify.
Some language is going to have to be changed because the bill, the way it's written, deals essentially with A, B, and C, not just C.
And B.
And B, which is
and
the whole
B.
list.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we got a problem here. Any other questions?
No.
Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The other question I noticed was in this, the board is proposing, and I'm sure they're going to talk to us about that when they come up, but they're actually proposing deleting the rabies vaccine from the list. So they're asking to delete sub C, and what would be the impact of that, since I guess you're proposing that it's really only supposed to apply to vaccines that are rabies.
Mr. Chair and Judith, Dr. Andrew Clark from the Department of Ag, the state veterinarian, is here, and he will be able to address that issue probably far better than I. But there seems to be very little reason to keep the rabies vaccine on that list now that it is no longer a live vaccine. However, just by removing, by removing rabies from that list, that's one issue. The other issue is who should still, in any case, administer the rabies vaccine. So there really are two separate issues. We would have no problem with removing rabies from the list of hazardous drugs.
Mm-hmm. Pardon me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. But if you're removing rabies from the list, then that means other folks... You're not limiting the field of who can administer that vaccine, correct? I mean, if you're saying that your bill is for the intent of allowing these interns and such to administer a rabies vaccine, but we're taking rabies vaccine, if indeed the committee decides to take rabies vaccine off that list because it's no longer a live virus in the vaccine, then...
Then 065 never doesn't, excuse me, but yes, I think I see what you mean. That's probably correct.
I can address something here. I believe it is in other statute, I think in the Practice Act, that rabies vaccination is only allowed by licensed veterinarians.
So do we'd want to change that language? If
somewhere, we've got to see the bill and get this straight.
I'm not sure it is in the practice.
It sounds to me like we don't have our ducks in a row this morning.
It sounds very much like that to me, too, Mr. Chair.
Since we've got some other people to testify, I'm going to listen to that testimony and ask Judith for some direction here in a few minutes. That's the joy of being a new chair. You can trust somebody who's a veteran with without feeling bad about it. Do you have any other comments you'd like to make? I'm going to ask Dr. Emilio DeBess to come up and share with us perspectives. Regardless of how things are written right now, we're trying to get at the idea. And I'll reconvene the committee as a whole now that Senator Fisher has joined us.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and subcommittee members. For the record, my name is Emilio DeBess. I'm the state public health veterinarian, and I would like to speak on behalf of the Department of Human Services in support of Senate Bill 281. That said, we believe that the bill could be improved. As a public health veterinarian, I'm responsible for overseeing illnesses that are transmitted from animals to humans. For example, West Nile encephalitis and or rabies, which is what we're going to be talking about today. Humans are potentially exposed to rabies when they're bitten by animals, especially mammals, and which may carry the disease. The risk of an unvaccinated animal allows for this. If we need to find out if the animal has rabies, then the animal usually has to be decapitated and the brain has to be tested for rabies. In a number of occasions, these animals are not available for testing. Therefore, humans have to go through through a set of rabies vaccine that will cost them about $1,500. The Department of Human Services is interested in minimizing the risk that humans have in terms of rabies exposure. This is typically done by vaccinating animals that may become infected and then by humans. However, the Oregon revised statute 596, 65, and 75 classify animal rabies as a hazard, which is not. We see this as a barrier for vaccinating animals. Senate Bill 281 expands the authorization to administer the rabies vaccine to veterinarians, veterinary interns, veterinarians with temporary licenses. However, it does not allow for veterinary technicians to do so, and that we feel that this may be a barrier. We believe that veterinary technicians could administer the rabies vaccine safely and effectively under the supervision of a veterinarian. The Oregon Administrative Rule 333-1917 requires that all dogs, cats should be vaccinated for rabies. And last year we amended this rule to consider valid for the purpose of vaccination that the vaccine could be given by a veterinary technician under the supervision of a licensed veterinarian. We believe that this bill could be improved in two ways, either by adding a certified technician under the supervision of a licensed veterinarian to paragraph 3A, or by eliminating the rabies vaccine, which is no longer considered to be a hazardous vaccine. In summary, the Department of Human Services support Bill 281 because it would add veterinary interns and veterinarians who have temporary licenses to the list of professionals that can administer the rabies vaccine. But we would greatly prefer that the bill also allow veterinary technicians to administer the rabies vaccine under the supervision of a licensed veterinarian. Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Any questions? We're dealing with a bill here that...
We have an amendment to that effect.
Senator...
Here's the suggestion.
Yeah. Senator Fisher, we've got a bill here that doesn't do what we think it's going to do, so we can't proceed with the bill anyway today. We're just taking testimony. The theory that we're wrestling with is some folks want technicians to be able to administer the vaccine, and others don't. And we've heard arguments now from both sides, and I'm just asking if there are questions that anybody might have. Any questions?
Under their own supervision?
I guess we'll let you go. Nobody seems
Thank
to have
you.
A question. Thank you very much.
And now, Andrew Clark.
Andrew Clark is next on our list. Welcome. We're glad you're here this morning.
Senator Shields, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Andrew Clark. I'm the state veterinarian at the Oregon Department of Agriculture. The bill, as stated, is very simple in that it allows veterinary interns and temporary licensees to administer for 596 to be changed to allow the administration of vaccines that are labeled hazardous, rabies being one of them, by licensed veterinary interns. And I would support the bill as it stands because it is appropriate that all of the hazardous vaccines be allowed to be administered by those people. So in my view, it is not an issue only of rabies. It is an issue of all of the vaccines that are listed as hazardous. So I would support the bill exactly as it is written in that regard. Rabies is not the only issue we're dealing with. The vaccines which are currently listed as hazardous are Brucella abortus, hog cholera, and rabies. So I would support the bill as it stands to amend and allow veterinary interns and temporary licensees to administer all of those vaccines. the removal of rabies vaccine from the hazardous list is an entirely separate issue. And if the bill is amended to do so, I would support that because it is no longer a hazardous vaccine. This bill was written when rabies vaccine was a modified live virus, and it was indeed hazardous. That is no longer the case. Rabies vaccines are all killed vaccines. And it is no longer appropriate or accurate to consider it a hazardous vaccine. In that regard, it should be removed. The implications of removal then allow consideration of technicians, licensed technicians and so on, to administer that vaccine. And in my view, that should be done as a consultation between the public health, under whose laws rabies control is administered, the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association, which represents the practicing veterinarians who do this actual work. And we would, aside from that, it is not an issue that the Department of Agriculture would further deal with because rabies is no longer a listed hazardous vaccine, if that is the direction the bill takes. I think both of those are supportable from my aspect.
Okay, so this morning we've gone from two to three possibilities on a bill. One is to take the bill the way it's written. And you're saying that there's a couple live vaccines that you would say go ahead and let the interns handle those live vaccines plus the rabies vaccine, which is no longer a live and dangerous vaccine, right?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Others are just interested in the rabies vaccine issue and haven't addressed the others, in which case the bill is not written the way it needs to be written. And the third issue that's sticking itself in here has to do with the vet tax. Okay, now, do you have some feelings on that issue?
The program is not administered by the Department of Agriculture, and therefore we are neutral on that position, on that situation.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you for helping us at least see all the possibilities a little more clearly. Senator Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Clark, not being too well professionally trained in these issues, are there other vaccines that have been hazardous that are now not considered hazardous, such as the rabies vaccine, or are the rest of them all considered hazardous?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fisher, this is the list that has been in existence in Oregon for many years, and that is the list of hazardous vaccines as it stands. There are not other vaccines which we consider hazardous at this time.
But, I mean, are there other vaccines besides rabies that are not hazardous?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fisher, there are many vaccines in use in veterinary medicine that are not considered hazardous.
So, in reality, follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
In reality, we're dealing with only one of many that might be considered, and we're only given the opportunity to do the rabies vaccine to these interns the way the original bill is?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fisher, my understanding of the bill...
I don't have a list of the... And you refer to a list of vaccines, and I don't have that list anymore.
Right. I have the list in front of me, Senator Fisher.
Oh, okay.
The list is in
the bill. I
4S596.065, Brucella abortus vaccine. That is brucellosis vaccination, which is used in large quantities and is a legal necessity for all brood cows to be vaccinated against brucellosis. Hog cholera vaccine, which has not been used for many, many years, and as a live virus vaccine was one that was potentially dangerous and had needed to be handled very properly. And rabies is the other vaccine that is listed in statute and no longer, in my view, needs to be so.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
So in reality, we're not talking about a long list of hazardous vaccines at this point in time, or are there a bunch of them that have come in under B, under D?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fisher, this is the list at this point. There are no others that are considered hazardous at this point. D sub B allows us to declare other vaccines hazardous if need be. So we have the authority to do that on a case-by-case basis. There are none under consideration at this point.
Okay. Is there any reason to think that interns couldn't... can I have the bill back? Couldn't handle the Purcella and the hog cholera? I mean, you've recommended that they all be left in the list. Can you give some of your rationale?
Mr. Chairman, yes. The intern veterinarians are fully qualified veterinarians, graduates of accredited institutions, and recognized by the Veterinary Medical Examining Board. I see no reason whatsoever that they could not use these vaccines. They're fully qualified veterinarians.
Okay, so the only question left then would be the vet tech question. I mean, if we wanted to do it, we could just pass this out of here or amend it and pass it out of here. And if there's a problem, they could catch it on the House side. Any other questions? Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, there are a couple of things that are part of this mix. One is that if veterinary technicians are approved to use to vaccinate against rabies, the certification of that, the direct supervision, the supervision needs to be direct, and the vaccination certificate needs to be signed by an accredited veterinarian if the certification is going to be good for export of animals. The Veterinary Services USDA a veterinarian will not sign an export certificate if the rabies vaccination certificate is not signed by an accredited veterinarian. That is one of the considerations in that mix. Other than that, it is not a regulatory issue, and the Department of Agriculture is neutral on that issue.
Okay, any other questions?
I have no further testimony, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I don't have anybody else signed up, but are there others that are wanting to testify? I think we maybe ought to allow ourselves to be enlightened more.
Couldn't be much more enlightened.
You got to come on up and announce yourself and tell us who you are and why you would want to come out here and talk.
Sorry, about I was late. Morning. I didn't get signed in on the paper.
That's okay.
Senator, Mr. Chairman, my name is John Betts. I'm a practitioner from Woodburn, but I'm also on the Board of Examiners for Veterinary Medicine. There's five of us, five veterinarians and two lay people. Okay. Yesterday we got wind of this bill, and we agreed with the amendment from the standpoint of we have control over licensing of veterinarians, temporary interim permit, temporary licensees, and licensed veterinary technicians. And the board feels that if rabies is taken off the list, that it should be our place to name who's going to use the vaccine. Right now, there's a rule in the Veterinary Practice Act that does not allow veterinary technicians to give rabies vaccine. We would have to change that rule in order for that to happen. It's against the law by our rules right now. And we feel that this vaccine should be taken off the list because it ties our hands. It doesn't allow veterinarians who are actually licensed and have an interim permit and are in practice to vaccinate these animals. And that's the position of the board, is we support the bill as amended from as far as veterinary technicians, but in reality, speaking for myself, a good compromise would be don't list who can do it and who can't do it. Leave it up to your board of examiners. That's what we're there for. We make if you take them off the list, it becomes the practice of veterinary medicine to give rabies vaccine. Therefore, we would have to debate it. We would have to do a rule change. We would have to get testimony. We would have to weigh all the pluses and minuses as to whether who can give vaccine and who can't give vaccine. Therefore, the board says, take it off so that you're not tying our hands. Right now, our hands are tied. Only licensed veterinarians can do it. And if we say interim permittees can do it, and if they can't because of this law, this is a statute. But we would like to be able to be in a position to where we can hear testimony and we can change the rules.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Fisher.
The rule that you're talking about, that's an OAR, is it not? An administrative rule?
The administrative rule is the administrative rule for the Veterinary Practice Act.
So if we do this, we're ultimately taking that rule out of your hands. Because you would be in violation of the law if you had that administrative rule, would you not?
Well, our administrative rule right now says veterinary technicians cannot give a rabies vaccine. That is a rule right now.
Yeah. We would relieve you of any possibility of having to rework that law if we just put it in law that they can. Because our law supersedes your OAR.
That's correct. By you listing who can and can't do it, then you're limiting us as your body, as your experts for the state of Oregon, as to what we can and can't do. And the board feels that if you take rabies out, that becomes the practice of veterinary medicine, and therefore it should be our jurisdiction as to who can and can't get the vaccine. All of these people are under our jurisdiction, are under the Board of Examiners jurisdiction. Licensed veterinarians, licensed veterinary technicians, temporary licensees, and interim permittees.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Fisher.
What can we expect from the veterinarian board? I think here's where the practical matter of the rub lies. Do we trust the board to allow this to happen, or do we just turn it over then to a board to selectively treat their licensees as they feel fit rather than following the idea that we have here?
The Board of Examiners, if they chose to change the rule, would have to do it just like we always change rules. We would have to put it out there for public testimony and hear the pluses and minuses as to whether it. The bottom line is, does it serve the public for veterinary technicians to give rabies vaccines? The arguments would have to come forth.
Well, it says possible work session.
Mr. Chair, that's what I was trying to get at, is how are they treating the technicians that they license? Are they impinging upon them because of higher professional pressure, or are they impinging on them because they're not trained to do it? And that's the problem we have with the boards, and I think that's why a lot of these things come up from time to time, is the fact that different groups with lesser licenses are treated rather shabbily by some of the professional boards. And that's what I was trying to ascertain here. Is this board antagonistic toward the
vet techs?
Vet techs, or are they supportive of the vet techs in the arenas in which they're trained properly?
If you may, the reason this all came up was a rule was passed and that allowed technicians by the health department to give vaccines here in the last year. The Board of Examiners chose to pass an emergency rule that supported that because we were afraid that we were going to get our licensees and our technicians in trouble if they followed that rule. Lo and behold, this is where this all started, is because it came out that the Department of Agriculture really controlled rabies. We didn't control it. The Department of Health and Human Services didn't control it. The Department of Agriculture controlled it because they had it in statute. And that's why this came about. We recognize, the board recognizes the training of technicians, and the question would have to be asked, does the public benefit from technicians giving rabies vaccine? And then it would have to be open to public hearing.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator?
I guess I'm still confused. Should we be dealing with trying to get these interns to be able to give the shots, or should we just take rabies out from under the Department of Agriculture and throw it to the four winds or wherever it needs to go because it's not a hazardous vaccination anymore?
Senator Fisher, I think there are your questions plus several others about this bill that haven't been answered. And now I'm informed that we don't have a fiscal either on the bill. And
I think it's all Mr. Barrow's fault myself.
Yeah, well, since he just arrived, let's blame it all on Dave this morning.
I was going to blame Senator Barrow. He looks kind of cranky today, so I'll just blame Barrow's.
Well, I don't know how a longtime person knowledgeable could get a little bill like this in such a predicament.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the way it goes in this business.
We could always blame the health department. They're a nice outfit to blame.
Yeah, what the heck.
It was quite a surprise to us when it all came to light that we were all dealing with rules. The health department was dealing with rules. We were dealing with rules, and lo and behold, there in the statute, the Department of Agriculture actually had the strength to control the whole thing.
Well, I appreciate somebody from your board coming this morning and sharing
with us. Thank you. I appreciate
you
letting us speak.
It's just my feeling. You have several pieces of this all up in the air at once. We need a pin them all down and bring this back and try and get everybody on the same page. And I think that can be done in a relatively short order.
Now, Mr. Chair, just one comment. I fully believe in the allowing the boards wherein they have shown themselves to be reasonable to deal with the professional problems under their purvey, so I don't have a problem with loosening things up and allowing them to do it. But, you know, let's do this the simplest way we can, allow the board the maximum latitude, and then watch the board make sure that they're using that latitude properly.
Okay. Also, I need to say this, just on the record, we don't want to lose sight of the issue of exporting animals that need a licensed vet to sign. So as you put all of that together, once we've got it all kind of shook down, let's bring this back. And with that, I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 281.
Another committee meeting. I'll be looking forward to that. My heart soars like an eagle.
It's better than the turkey operation we're usually looking at. Is that sufficient this morning?
Where's the game farm arguments and stuff? Let's liven this committee up, Mr. Chair. There he is, right there.
That's next. When we want to play games, we get Senator Farioli in here.
This is Senator Cervid Tuberculosis coming up here.
I would like to open a hearing on Senate Bill 291. And before Senator Corcoran gets any further carried away, I'd like to ask Senator Farioli if he'd like to come up. As you're coming up, however, I'm going to ask Judith if she'll try to explain a little bit about this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 291 does come to us in sponsorship of Senator Farioli. It would remove the three-mile separation requirement for creation of a hunting preserve. It does declare an emergency effective on passage, and we have already received a no fiscal, no revenue impact on the measure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, good. A no fiscal.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, committee members. Mr. Chairman, before I begin on Senate Bill 291, I will tell you that it's long been my heart's desire to see Senator Corcoran carried away from this building. If I last long enough, maybe I'll see it. Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 291 comes to me from a constituent who was trying to start a hunting preserve in Wasco County out in eastern Oregon, and encountered a difficulty in the statute, which was a three-mile limitation, that you couldn't have two facilities closer than 3 miles. So he asked me to research that issue, and we started looking at what is 3 miles. Is it three statutory miles? Is it 3 air miles? Is it 3 miles measured on the ground over the topography with a wheel? Is it driven by a biological imperative for the bird's sake? Is it a safety issue? And we did determine it was map miles. I didn't realize
it. Who?
Map miles.
Map miles.
Okay, so there's different kinds of miles. But the reason for the 3 mile buffer zone is it has absolutely nothing to do with the biology of the birds. The birds that are used in hunting preserves are raised for the purpose of being used in the hunting preserve. They are not expected to winter over. There isn't a biological imperative for their escapement as there is with wild game animals. As a matter of fact, that 3-mile buffer was put in there simply because that was the suggestion of the originators of the hunting preserve legislation. They just stuck it in there. In fact, now, in much of the landscape in rural Oregon, agricultural pursuits are getting very difficult to maintain. We've had a consolidation of the wheat ranching in size and a drop in the number of operators. We're still farming and ranching approximately the same number of acres, but the operators have had to become far more efficient just to stay in business. We may be producing approximately the same amount of crops, but at far greater efficiency, and the margins are a lot thinner than they used to be. The game preserves have allowed some ranchers and farmers to augment their income with this pursuit and effectively subsidize their agricultural operations. This bill seeks to remove the 3-mile limitation. It does not change the maximum number of acres that can be included in game reserves or hunting preserves. On the west side of the state of Oregon, that's limited to 640 acres, I think, and on the east side, that's limited to 1,200 and 80 acres. So the issue of size or the operation of these things really is not being affected by this bill. What is being affected by this bill is the elimination of that 3-mile reserve buffer between facilities. What it will allow is that undoubtedly there will be additional landowners that pursue this activity, either as a primary action, a primary source of income, or as a secondary subsidy for their agricultural operations. Since the bill has been drafted and dropped into the hopper, we've had a couple of folks that have asked for amendments to the bill. One is that some constituents would like to see a 200-yard buffer zone between active operations and other property, which could easily be done inside the property lines of these preserves. And that corresponds to a safety zone, and I think that's certainly a reasonable concern. And then others have asked for simple recognition that the use of these properties for sporting clays as a sporting pursuit be allowed, although there's no prohibition in statute from allowing that, so I don't think that really is a necessary amendment. I've discussed these amendments with folks in the House, and they've agreed that if the bill comes over to them in the present form, that they will hear the bill on the House side and add whatever amendments are necessary there. Or, Mr. Chairman, if it's your desire, we could have those amendments drafted and dropped for consideration in your committee. The bill is, as far as I'm concerned, an economic development opportunity for folks mostly on the east side of the state of Oregon. It doesn't seek to revisit the issue of whether these preserves ought to exist. It simply removes a limitation that was placed in a relatively arbitrary manner about where they should be placed on the landscape. Be happy to answer any questions from the committee.
Yeah, in a minute. This 200-yard buffer, is that enough, in your opinion? Can you tell me how they arrived at 200?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think that has more to do with the trajectory of a lead shot than it has to do with anything else, and it is a sort of a standard safety buffer for shotguns. You just probably wouldn't find a shotgun that could carry over 200 yards, and it's just a matter of keeping the activity confined within the borders of the property rather than subjecting a neighboring property to the unintended rain of lead shot right against the roof.
Okay. Yeah. Senator Fisher?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. I'm amazed at the depth of your study and investigation in this subject, and I wondered if you went a little further and found out what made them consider only 640 acres or 1,280 acres as a reasonable amount in which to allow this operation to take place?
Mr. Chairman, I have done some field research in this area, as a matter of fact, but I can only speculate about the limitation of sizes. But I believe it had to do with wanting this to be a small business pursuit rather than seeing, you know, tens of thousands of acres reserved under a single ownership for bird hunting purposes. So 640 acres on the west side makes that a relatively small business pursuit. 1,280 acres on the east side also makes that a relatively small business pursuit. And what I think it does is allows these operations to be scattered across the landscape rather than aggregated in 20,000 acre blocks.
Right.
Makes more opportunity and perhaps more competition, which would tend to keep the price lower for the people that wish to pursue this sport. So it is an economic development question.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Fisher.
In your research, have you figured out what a huge amount of area the 200 yards around a perimeter takes out of a square mile?
It is a great deal of ground, but the buffer could be a no-fire zone where you simply wouldn't be allowed to shoot. Rather than an off limits, you can't use the property. The only thing that would happen in the buffer zone is that people would be prohibited from firing a shotgun out in that buffer zone. Those buffer zones currently exist on private land where the public is welcome to hunt, and on state lands where hunting is controlled by the state, simply as a safety measure. And they're posted as no fire zones or safety zones with the signage, and people just respect the signage and don't fire shotguns in that area. Right. And so it's a lot of ground, but it is not considered to be an onerous burden by the landowners. And in fact, it's considered to be a desirable safety mechanism for the neighbors. Makes them better neighbors, Senator Fisher, through Senator Chair Shields.
Mr. Chair, I'm not arguing that. I'm not arguing that point. I'm just snickering to myself with all the times that a farmer gets sprayed with shot in his cornfield and stuff like that and has no buffer from any neighbor that's not in a program like this. Normally speaking, if you're working in a situation like that, you're firing inside anyway and not outside.
Thank you, Senator Farioli, for bringing the bill. We do have a little more testimony. I had a note here that said that because of those amendments that perhaps the work session was too early, but you're suggesting something different. You're suggesting if we want to go ahead with it that they'd be willing to deal with it on the House side.
Mr. Chairman, this bill, I think, is a good bill. I've not seen or detected any opposition to the bill, including from the agency. I think that the amendments that are brought are friendly amendments. I think that some of them have merit. I would just soon move the bill forward. I guess, Mr. Chairman, any bill that has no fiscal impact on them, I just think shouldn't be held up in the process.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Larry Cooper from ODF&W is here. I want to hear him, and maybe he can give us a little more history as well as...
Incidentally, Mr. Chair, by the way, I don't believe they're allowed to use lead shot anymore. They have to use steel shot.
I can answer that.
It's just...
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Roy Elliker for the record, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And on my left today, Mr. Larry Cooper, Assistant Wildlife Division Administrator, providing some brief testimony on the bill. Essentially, Mr. Chair, we have no problem with the bill. It sounds like there are some amendments that are going to be proposed by folks. We'll work closely with Senator Farioli's office to assist in those amendments. And we've also attached some information for the committee's use, including the current statutes 498-248, which govern private hunting reserves, as well as the current public listing of all the current reserves in the state, which are about 68 or thereabout at this point. And Senator Farioli is exactly correct. There seems to be more demand for this kind of small business opportunity. I think, you know, this statute was written back in the early 70s, and at that time, the department's opinion was that in the Columbia Basin in particular, wild bird populations and particularly pheasant habitat in the Columbia Basin were probably in better shape than it is now for a number of reasons. And what these reserves tend to do is provide a service and an opportunity for hunters who, especially when they're training dogs or would like to just go out for a quick day of hunting, they can go to one of these reserves and hunt birds specifically raised for the purpose. And it works well for both the business owner and works well for the sportsman. And we don't have any problem with Senator Farioli's bill. Might be helpful for to meet the increased demand. And again, we'll work on amendments as needed.
And conceptually, the amendments that Senator Farioli mentioned are okay with you guys.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, we took some notes while he was talking, and we can work with his office and some of the constituents who would like these amendments and get back to him some recommendations or whatever is needed.
Okay. Did you have anything that you wanted to add?
No, Senator. Okay. I think Roy took care of it.
Okay. Well, it looks like we have just got a quorum back so that we can actually vote this bill out of here.
Which bill?
Hunting preserves.
I'm a no.
I'm a no. Did you talk about the question I had? I'm sorry, I got called into the president's office. Did you talk about two hunting preserves separated by one fence and one side of the fence not knowing what the other side's doing when they're out shooting?
The one amendment, and you gentlemen might want to comment on this, the one amendment that will be developed and we're going to let the House side do it, is a 200-yard buffer inside. And that's an interesting question, because if each one of them had a 200-yard buffer, that would essentially be a 400-yard buffer between... Well, each one of them has a 200-yard buffer, so it's not likely that any shot from a shotgun would have any effect on another operation.
Mr. Chair, that's what I was trying to do, was just show you the idiocy of that type of reasoning, because there isn't anything against two ranchers going over there and shooting at each other 10 feet away on their own property, because they don't have 200-foot buffers.
The only difference is we don't legislate that. They can shoot themselves if they want.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Why do we legislate this now that they've got to have a 200-foot buffer? Let them use reasonable hunting practices and watch where they're shooting, and that should take care of the problem.
Well, they are
suggesting...
They'd
add a little spice to their life, maybe, if they had to dodge a shot or two. They'd be more careful of where they're pointing their own gun.
Okay.
Whatever. There's nothing. If I allow somebody to hunt on my property, there's nothing that I know of that says that they can't shoot within 200 feet of my boundary or 200 yards of my boundary.
But
nothing like common sense that says you know your background.
And common sense doesn't say that you don't shoot within 200 yards of your boundary. That is uncommon sense. Common sense is that you always know where you're shooting at, and you don't shoot in an area regardless of whether it's 200 yards or not.
Gentlemen, I'd like to suggest that the folks in the industry are suggesting this for themselves. If we have some agreement here, we can go into a work session, we can send this over to the House. It doesn't have a fiscal impact. We can move it and let them work with it over there. If you guys don't want to do that, please let me know that you don't want to do that.
I'm not the one that said I was against it.
You got two votes. Just move.
You don't like the bill?
No, I don't like these hunting preserves.
You can't move the bill without Beyer.
Yeah, we'd have to have Senator Beyer to move the bill.
Why?
And because two is not a majority of four.
It's not of those present.
200.
Well, yards. I won't obstruct it. I'll
200 yards is not a majority.
Go ahead and move it. Yeah.
All right. In that case, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 291. And we'll move to a work session on Senate Bill 291. Senator,
Chair,
go ahead.
I move that we approve Senate Bill 291 and send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Fisher has moved Senate Bill 291 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? If not, can we have a vote?
Senator Corcoran?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Vice Chair Meyer? Chair Shields?
Aye. I'm going to ask if Senator Farioli will just carry this bill when the time comes. Is that okay?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd be honored to carry the bill. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to thank Senator Corcoran for his courtesy, though. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing the bill, and I'll be happy to carry it.
And with that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 291. And I understand that we never did get what we needed on Senate Bill 256. And so we can't move that. 281, they'll come back someday when they got it all figured out. So we're done with the work that we've got to do this morning, and I'm going to adjourn the committee.
I'm sorry.